Today's Between the Ropes podcast is brought to you by Suplex Apparel. Find them online at suplexapparel.com. They're a UK-based clothing brand. They have a team of professional wrestlers like Adam Cole, Zack Sabre Jr., Prince Devitt, and others. And right now they have their winter range. Jackets, hoodies, hats, rucksacks, t-shirts, and more. And for both men and women. It's pro wrestling-focused clothing for wrestlers and fans, and they ship worldwide. Become a part of the team at Suplex Apparel. Go online to suplexapparel.com. Create your legacy.
Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get between the ropes. Between the ropes.
Everybody can now get the documentary Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Funny Equals Money. It's available on DVD now. You can get the digital download coming up on November 11th. The man behind it is Colt Cabana, who joins me right now in the city of Chicago, where very little sleep has been done by most people. Does that include you, Colt?
Yeah, but I mean, for different reasons, though.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go out on a bender, too, now that the Cubs are world champs.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's exciting, but also the lifestyle that I live, I don't sleep much either. So,
how long did that take you to get used to the lack of sleep?
Oh, you know, to be fair, I'm okay with it because, you know, like there is no really wrestling on a Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, or a Monday. So, you know, I just tend to catch up in the middle of the week. So I'm okay if I'm on the road or you know, I'm getting, you know, while I'm wrestling my shows or whatever it might be. I'll just catch up in the middle of the week. It's fine.
So how is the city of Chicago right now following the Cubs win?
Everyone's just electric. A lot of blue pride going around. Yeah, it's just obviously, you know, 108 years. It was just it was about time. And I'm super happy that it was just able to happen in my lifetime and my mother's lifetime, most importantly, I think. You know, she used to she went to every single game in 1969 and sat in the bleachers. And she's been a fan just it's always been a constant in my life. You know, I just remember coming home from school and she would be watching the game and the game was always on. And I just grew up around the Chicago Cubs. I actually won catch with a Cub, I think in 1996. And I got to go on the field and play catch with one of the Cubs. And like, you could either win Mark Gray, Sammy Sosa, maybe Kerry Wood or something, and like I got Scott Service, the crappy catcher. So, but it was definitely a cool experience. So yeah, it's been great for the city.
Yeah, it absolutely has. I mean, it's changed, I think, a lot of lives up there. And I told everybody, like, if you're a Cubs fan, you know a Cubs fan. If you ever wanted to ask them for a favor, now is the time to do it because they'll probably just say yes to anything you want.
As long as you start it with, how about them Cubbies, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? If you know it's a Cubs fan and you start off with that, you could probably get away with a lot for at least a couple more weeks, I'm probably thinking. This hangover is going to be there for a while. So, yeah, well, let's talk about the DVD. So third documentary you've done, this one focusing on comedy and wrestling. Where did the idea for this one come about?
Well, I mean, the series itself is really fun, and, you know, it was really – in my mind, like the first real inside look at this new era of independent wrestling, really showing the fans what it's all about. And the first one was me and Sal Renaro and Brian Danielson, who went on to become Daniel Bryan. This was before he even got in the WWE. And the independent wrestling was just always known as a word, but unless you like lived in that bubble, like you really didn't know what was really going on and how it worked. You just heard the word, the buzzword, independent wrestling. So that's I thought it was a very successful documentary. I went on, did a second one where I documented with guys coming from WWE back to the independents. And now this one is still, we show life on the road, how it works, the hotels, the travel, the bookers, the crazy fans, you know, the hot dog, the boiling hot dogs for sale. And of course, the other theme of this was wrestlers who do comedy. And, luckily enough for me that these have been successful. I don't need to do a Kickstarter. I just fund them myself. And, I was able to put a little more money into this one. I flew over Kikutaro from Japan. I flew over Grado from Scotland. And these were two of the funniest wrestlers that I've ever seen or been around. And we traveled the Midwest and we documented it. And obviously, funny ensues because there's three funny people in the car. but also we really like break down how and why comedy wrestling works or doesn't work. And so I think that's an interesting part that's never really been dissected that I know of in this kind of documentation.
What is the key, do you think, to being a good comedy wrestler? Because there's so many different little aspects of it, including trying to win over a crowd, knowing your audience, and trying to make sure that everything you do or some of the things you do actually is funny and it's not forced, and you actually get the response that you're trying to get from the audience.
Well, there you can hear the train going by my apartment. Yeah, so there's a couple of things, I think, and I think one of them you hit on the head is not forcing comedy. And then there's another two other things that I think might be the key, or in my head, is justifying what you're doing. And that means not forgetting that we're in a wrestling ring, and you have to remember that people have paid to see wrestling, so you have to use wrestling as the context for your comedy. And then the other thing is also a good straight man, I think, which a lot of people don't really know about or understand. But in order, you know, it takes two to wrestle in there, and it takes two people to have a great match, and also it takes two people to make something funny. So, you know, when I'm in there with a good straight man, that's when, you know, the match is even better than it can be if I'm just in there with somebody who really doesn't understand how it works.
Is it hard to convince, like, somebody else that you're in the ring with, like, hey, this is how we need to have this certain dynamic to a match when we're talking about this style of wrestling, we're talking about doing a comedy match, that there does need to be a straight man, and you've got to have somebody that can play along and play that role very effectively?
Yeah, sometimes I feel bad asking people to kind of make themselves look like an ass a little bit. but also, I know when to do it and when not to do it. If there's somebody who's a very strong heel or somebody with a strong personality that it wouldn't fit to have them look like that, then I don't do it. But, you know, the people who like to show out and people that love just the kind of the concept of over-the-top kind of almost like Memphis-style wrestling that really like that always get a kick out of it. And it's something different for them to do. And it's it'll always get a good reaction. So as a performer, you know, I think my opponent loves it because you get reactions out of it. And so in that aspect, it's not always that hard, but I understand. And that does come along, people being like, that's not what I would do. And I'll be like, all right.
Everybody else is the expert, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No. But everyone is the expert when it comes to their own career. And I'm okay with that. Like, I understand. And I think that makes me a good person, and I'm not that selfish that I do understand if someone doesn't want to do something, then I'm happy not to do it.
Is it harder to do a good comedy match than a straightforward wrestling match?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand. And that's mainly what this documentary is kind of about, is like how hard it is to do comedy wrestling. Because you can be a great wrestler, and you have to be to be a comedy wrestler, but so you can be a great wrestler, and now you have to add the layer of comedy. So you have to be a great wrestler and a great comedian. You got to do two things. And so, you know, it's kind of the same as, like, you know, I guess I would even say high flying or even hardcore. It's just, if you want to do those great, you're adding a whole new layer and a whole new dimension to wrestling itself. And for that reason, I think it is harder to do. It's harder to make it great.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that, you know, I mean, people always talk about, you know, you learn from each match as you go. You're always learning. You're always compiling different things. And the same definitely has to be with, you know, when it comes to comedy matches. But I would think more so than either a straightforward match, you have to kind of read your audience the second that you walk through the curtain a little bit even more carefully when it comes to a comedy match, because you got to see who exactly is out here. What do you think can work? How to adjust? I mean, that's got to be like half the game right there in my mind.
Yeah, it's a great call. Yeah, knowing your audience. And, like, I do a lot of improv out there, and that's when it's the most fun for me, too. So I love the idea of reading my audience, looking around, seeing who's willing to play, who's not willing to play. And sometimes those people who are not willing to play, those are the most fun to play with, because, you know, the guys who have their hands crossed and they have boo-boo faces, or sometimes the ones who will just boo me no matter what, I can get the best reactions just playing with them, and they don't even like it. And that always makes fun. I'm a big crowd interaction guy, and I love sometimes my matches, I don't even do any wrestling in it. I just screw around with the fans.
Isn't that the best thing, though? Because then you can have a good, effective match that people are going to be happy about, and maybe you only have to take, like, one bump.
Yeah, well, that's one of those things that it doesn't play well on DVD or video on demand. I've noticed that. It can kind of get boring. But it plays so well within the moment and live. And, you know, that's kind of what I wrestle for. I'm a live theater kind of guy, a live performance. I encourage everyone to come up to the live shows. I think there's so much fun. And when you're in the moment, like, yeah, it is. It really is great. And it does. And, it, you know, I don't mind taking the bumps. But I guess, yeah, at 36, it's more fun not to take the bumps.
But isn't that part of, like, the business? We all know, like, people are there to see a wrestling match. But bottom line is you're there to be entertained. That's why people buy a ticket, is because they want to see something that's entertaining. And this kind of adds to that whole, you know, there's going to be something for everybody kind of thing, I would think. And that's why I wonder, you know, this is the right time to have even more comedy wrestling.
Well, I think, and we touch on it a little bit in the DVD, is that I think so many, like, you know, when I started kind of doing this kind of style, there was only me on the card doing it. And now you go to a card and there's 20 guys doing it. So it's almost like it's getting to oversaturation, where it used to be the niche thing. And now it's almost the regular on these independent shows. But I do agree. Yeah. I mean, it's the circus, you know, you need a little bit of everything, and you need to break up the monotony. So yeah, there should be a regular match, a tag match, you know, maybe a ladies match, a comedy match, a hardcore match, or a hard hitting match. And, you know, I think we all, you know, guys like Hiku and Grado and myself, we kind of know our role within the show.
Do you think that comedy wrestling is more important now, considering that there are so many wrestling fans that care about the quality of matches, and there's so many great wrestlers out there and so many different groups? When you're talking about all these, you know, awesome matches that are potentially anywhere at any independent show, you know, anywhere you go to, does that make it that comedy wrestling is a little bit more important now to kind of help break that up a little bit?
I think it's the same amount of importance that it's been throughout. I mean, there's been great comedians who are wrestlers for years. And, you know, my heroes are Les Kellett and Cat Weasel in the 60s and 70s British wrestling. So it's, you know, guys like Junkyard Dog and George Animal Steel and, you know, just Boogie Woogie Man. You know, it's just and even like Eugene and Santino. It's just, I think throughout the years, there's different guys who do it. And so I'm not sure about the level of importance, but I think it's always just important. And, you know, maybe there's a nicer spotlight on it now, just thanks to the internet and thanks to just more people being aware of wrestling more than just, you know, WWE or whatnot.
So when did you realize that you could make a living as a comedy wrestler? And that's not all you do, but, you know, that's something that obviously you do more of now. But when did you kind of figure that out? Like, hey, I can make a living doing this, and you really embrace the genre.
Well, I've been making a living since basically 2002 as a full-time pro wrestler, which is pretty crazy.
Right.
And yeah, I do all different kinds of styles. I mean, you know, but this is the one that I really enjoy doing the most. And I always say that there was a moment in a match where I was kind of just a regular wrestler. This must have been 2003, 2004. And I was wrestling AJ Styles in IWC in Pittsburgh. And we did this thing, and I just stuck out my foot and I tripped him. And I literally got the best reaction probably I've ever gotten in my whole career at that point. And, you know, definitely of the night. And it just, that was kind of, I think, the moment where a light switch went off. And I was like, wow, like, people love that. And all I did was trip him. Like, it was just a misdirection of what they thought they were going to see and then what they did see. And I think that's what comedy is. You know, you think you're going to hear something and then you hear something different that makes you laugh, when at least audio. And then, you know, I think the same with visual too. So I think that was really the moment where it kind of hit me where I'd like to explore this a little bit more. If that was too, you know, I've been exploring it for over, you know, over 10 years now. So it's kind of cool.
Isn't it funny how some of the simplest things are the most effective?
Yeah, you know, I think, and that's why I think what's so great about wrestling and some of the stuff that gets over is it's just organic, whatever, you know, that's usually the best stuff. And, you know, Daniel Bryan's just a great example of that. Is just, you know, maybe it was a little calculated, but that there was no team that came up with a yes chant in a marketing team that came up with it. He just started doing it. And it caught on, and it was great. And that's kind of – I think that's how some of the best stuff becomes.
So what did you learn the most from doing this documentary? Is there anything in particular that stood out?
I think one of the cool things that came out of this documentary – and, you know, Jack Ettinger is the director and editor of it. He kind of put it all together. And, you know, I helped direct while we were filming and everything. But, you know, you kind of go into this wanting to show everybody how funny you are. And you want to be like, look how great my matches are. Look how funny we are. We're the best. And as it came out, there were some instances where the comedy didn't work. And Jack kept it in the movie. And we kind of highlighted it, too. And I thought it was super interesting that, you know, not only do we show what works, but we show what doesn't work and how vulnerable we are as performers for stuff that doesn't work. And we kind of break down why it doesn't work and, you know, what we would do next time or what we should have done. And, you know, it's kind of it's hard because I think on a best of DVD, you would never put, you know, when you really crap the bed. But that was something that was kept in the movie. And I think it was important that it was because it really shows you kind of got to show the good with the bad. And so I think that was something that that I didn't expect to come out of this movie that ended up coming out of it.
But I think you got to keep that in there because this is documentary style. This isn't the best of, like you said. So you've got to tell the story of exactly what goes on kind of behind the scenes, you know, going up and down the roads. And this is what really makes this real, you know, and yeah, showing both sides of it.
Remember, like, it's my money. I'm the producer. Like, you know, ego-wise, I should probably be like, make me look amazing. But, you right. know, I don't. Yeah, yeah. But I don't.
No, but, I mean, I think it makes you even more real to the fans and to the audience and to everybody that would be interested in this. And it makes you, I think people can relate to you a little bit more if they say, oh, okay, so he's not perfect. You know, that I'm not perfect either. So it makes you even more relatable to kind of the average Joe.
And I think that's what my career has been for the last eight years after being fired from, you know, WWE is, hey, I am like you. And that's what my podcast was initially about and still is. And that's who I am as a performer. I'm not trying to be something I'm not. I just remember like going in those meetings with Vince McMahon and the buzzword then was always like, you know, like, how are you larger than life? And I always thought to myself, like, I'm not larger than life and I don't want to be larger than life. Like, I think I just want to be me. And I think fans would like me if they just knew me. And that's kind of what's come of my career, the last 8 years or so is I think fans like me because they know the real me. And yeah, that's kind of put out through these documentaries, especially this one.
What was it like being around Vince McMahon and having one-on-one interactions with him?
You know, I only had one meeting with Vince McMahon. Otherwise, there was a couple weird hellos that were very awkward.
You don't say.
Yeah. And we never had a real relationship. We had a meeting. I think the funniest thing that came out, I made him laugh once. And it was after they'd given me Scotty Goldman as a gimmick, and he goes, so are you really Jewish? And I go, yeah, I mean, I am, but I'm not like a super Jew. And he laughed on that one.
I'm sure he did. So, you know, it's funny because I know you talked about that experience. And, you know, you've even stated on a few occasions, I think you're exaggerating, that you were the worst WWE superstar of all time. Now, looking back on it now, going through the experience of WWE, was that, you know, looking back at it now, was it more of a positive? I mean, did it make you a better performer? Or how has it affected you since, you know, leaving there and where you are now?
Well, yeah, there was a someone sent me a link to a thread on Reddit where I was the worst wrestler in WWE history. I was 0-7, so no one had that many fights and lost that and hadn't won. So, which is pretty funny for me. To me, I see humor in it now, and I only see humor in it now because I've been so successful and I've had such a great successful career post WWE. So I look at that experience like it was the best thing that ever happened to me was kind of being fired and fans gathering around and like almost picking me up and carrying me to independent wrestling success. You know, while I was there and when I got fired, like, yeah, that was very sad, in the moment, but hindsight, looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
But isn't that one of the great parts about like the wrestling business and that, okay, so things didn't work out in WWE, but that doesn't mean that you're not successful in this line of work, that there's other places to go. There's other places that you can work and you can be a star and you can be successful. The way that some people define it, I think, you know, everybody has their own definition for it, I guess. And just because you don't make it in WWE or don't have you're not John Cena or you're not the world champion doesn't mean that you're not good at your craft.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I don't know if I said this, when I started wrestling, I just never thought I'd be in the WWE because I just didn't look the part, you know, like I didn't look like Chuck Palumbo or Sean O'Hare. These guys were just massive men. So in my head, like I only wanted to just, if I could be a full-time pro wrestler, that was my only goal. And so, you know, getting the WWE was nice, but like I still in my head was just like, I had done 8 years at that point as a, like just wrestling around thinking I'd never get there and being happy that I was able to live in Chicago. I was able to have my own place. I bought a car all off of just wrestling. So even then it was considered a success. So to be honest, like the minute I was able to quit my day job and be a full-time wrestler, that moment was success for me. And yeah, I might've been, you know, making $6,500 a year, but I was doing what I wanted to do for a living. And to me, that was the best success story that there could be.
You know, you talked about, you know, this the long career that you've had so far. There's been so many things that have changed, especially probably over the last 5-10 years. We see where the independents are now. What do you think are the best and worst changes that have happened in the wrestling business over maybe the last 5 or 10 years, things that you've experienced or seen firsthand?
Well, I think the best change was when myself and Ryan Barkin started Pro Wrestling Tees for independent wrestlers. And we were able to help make all the independent wrestlers extra money and help them live out their dream as an independent wrestler. And then I think the worst thing that we did was start Pro Wrestling Tees because now there's no room for me at the merchandise table. Everybody has t-shirts now.
You're killing the business from within.
Yeah, I know.
Why would you do such a thing? But I mean, that's why you got to start making documentaries now to offset that.
Well, I've been making documentaries for a while now. So I think that I've realized that just to, you know, to not spread myself thin, but to spread myself out, you know, to make sure that I can, you know, try to make a living and make some income from all different places. So,
you know, it's funny because some people talk about going into the indies and there are some that are very successful and there are some that, you know, you're still going to get some small shows, but can you find the beauty in an indie show, no matter what the size of the crowd, considering that this is something you've done for so long and you've probably seen about everything there is to see in the wrestling business?
I've seen I've been to every single kind of show, except there was a guy in Ohio years ago, an M-Dog, Matt Cross, used to wrestle on these prison shows.
What?
And he would wrestle in a prison for the prisoners. And I so desperately wanted to do those shows. I was like, I don't need any money. I just want to wrestle on a prison show because to me, that's the romantic part about wrestling. Like, yeah, good for you, John Cena. Go wrestle in your arenas of thousands of people every week. I want to wrestle in front of prisoners. And, you know, I want to wrestle at a fat camp, which I did, and in front of the Inuits in, you know, the northernmost part of Canada and, you know, in front of the Yakuza in Japan. Like, those are the experiences that I love. Now, of course, yeah, I'd love to wrestle in front of 20,000 people every night. That'd be great. But but I do love the complete opposite. So for me, even when I show up and there's 10 people in the crowd or I show up and there's no seats or there's just people like, you know, that are – I don't even know. Just the weirder, the better for me. I love it. There's just something about it that I really love.
How many shows have you done where there's been a crowd of 20 or less?
I mean, you know, I a good handful, you know, especially early in my career where you just try to wrestle as much as you can. But, you know, every now and then it'll happen. I don't know if I can, you know, maybe, I don't know, a couple dozen.
Yeah. But that's probably pretty normal, though, especially for considering how long you've been in the business, right?
Yeah. And, you know, but also, like, I'm a higher profile guy, so I tend to be on some of the higher profile shows now, but
yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. Those shows, I love them. Even if I get stiff on pay, I'm still like, well, what a fun experience.
Well, that's the whole thing is you've got to embrace it. I mean, obviously you want to be paid, but at the same time, is it really going to do you any good if you sit there and bitch and moan about something and you know, there's some people there that paid to be entertained, to have fun. So why not try to have as much fun out of the, you know, what the cards are dealt to you, you know, rather than, you know, just getting mad about it.
Yeah, I remember we wrestled this show, I think it was 2006, 2007 in Conyers, Georgia. And I remember the promoter, the guy's name was Buddy. He worked at Waffle House. He put on the show. And
of course.
He ran out with the gate in the middle of the show.
It was in front of probably like 25 or 20 people. The main event was the Masked Superstar versus Brad Armstrong. And I remember myself, I think I wrestled John Walters. It was in a boxing ring, so like it was so hard to wrestle in. And God, I just remember Masked Superstar Billy Eady, who was probably 60 at the time, Brad Armstrong. They wrestled really hard and tried really hard. And like these poor guys were like 60 and 50 years old respectively, and they just like that just like. The idea that they're like the promoter ran out and they were like, man, I can only assume they're like, we've been doing this for so long. Like, it just kind of seemed defeated at that time. And like, ugh, it never ends.
Yeah, it does never end. So let's talk about the podcast for a minute. So the Art of Wrestling podcast, which you've been doing for a while now. You know, how has that changed you, or has it changed you as a performer to be able to sit down and have these long conversations with your peers in the business?
Yeah, I've been doing it 6.5 years now, well, it's changed my career. Just the idea that, like, you know, I don't know that I've been able to. Well, I just started a thing that nobody was really doing, and it took a while for people to realize how great the concept was. And but as a performer too, I think it's made me a better performer because it is with my peers. So like, I'm not looking to hurt anybody, and I'm not looking for a scoop, or I'm not looking to get anything crazy out of it. Like I'm almost, you know, I look at it like I'm trying to put this guy over. I'm trying to make people a fan of his. I'm trying to get the best out of this person, whoever it is. And it's usually my friend, because that's who I have on the show, are my friends in wrestling. So I want people to really see the highlights. It's kind of like the Heyman, you know, you try to get the best and you hide the worst out of him. And that's kind of how I feel that. I do the show, and so that I think that can be translated to anything in performing, and especially in wrestling too. So I kind of take the same concepts, and it's just I've been doing it so long, so obviously you grow and you get better with experience.
Well, I think that's one of the great things that comes across as the podcast is that it's not really an interview; it's just a conversation with mm-hmm. somebody that is a friend of yours. And when you look back on it now, do you wonder like? Well, I really started a trend here because we see so many other people. I mean, just podcasts in general have obviously, you know, mushroomed into what they are now. But we see it when it comes to wrestling podcasts, and especially when it comes to even wrestling podcasts with people that are in the business being, you know, hosting their own.
Yeah, I mean, I started mine in 2010, and I think everyone was kind of afraid of it because it was kind of taboo. I think the fans loved it. I think performers within the industry were afraid of it because it was kind of taboo. It was kind of seen as like that's kind of you know, for lack of a better word, like that's a mark thing to do is to you know you get interviewed, you don't do the interviewing, or you know what I'm saying, you don't host the show, you have you get interviewed by someone who hosts the show. And I kind of saw it in a different light, like. We were having all these different conversations in the locker room, and I just thought they were all amazing, and we'd be sitting around, and maybe I would kind of lead them because I was just I was kind of influenced by some of the podcasts I was listening to at the time with comedians. And so I just thought it'd be great to have these on record and let the world hear it. And then, you know, I think years later, Steve Austin started doing it, and then I think people were like, oh, you're allowed to do it because – he's literally, if not the best wrestler of all time and the most respected. So you can't be like, you're not allowed to do that. Like, they're like, if Steve says it's okay, then we all say it's okay. And so I think Steve was really, you know, even though I had started the concept and done the concept for years, I think Steve was really the first one who kind of let it be okay. And I think that's when the floodgates started to really open with everyone doing it. You know, I think Steve, you know, he gives me credit, which is nice. You know, when he first started, he started texting and emailing me and asking me like kind of some tidbits and told me he'd listened to a bunch of my shows and he really liked the Mark Rocco one in particular. So that's always kind of cool to hear when you're I'm a WWE reject and you've got the greatest WWE wrestler ever asking you advice about something in wrestling. It's that's a nice feeling.
Yeah, that is, you know, and I look at your podcast and some of the other ones as well, but especially yours as kind of a safe zone where it's just like, hey, this is a conversation I would have with somebody. It just happens that we're recording it for other people to listen to. And I think that that's what makes it come off as good and as entertaining as it does. You know, because you are a wrestler, because you've been in the business, because you've been through so many different things, do you think that allows guys to open up a little bit more to you like they would for just if they were doing like a general podcast or an interview with somebody, do you think that maybe you can go places maybe others can't simply because of who you are and being in the business and possibly even knowing these guys?
Yeah, well, I think that's safe zone is a word I use a lot. So that's interesting that, that you said that. Is I will say that, hey, this is a safe or this is a safe place. You know, you have nothing to worry about. I'm not looking to make you come out of this worse. If anything, I'm trying to make you come out of it better. And yeah, 100%. Like, and I know this. I know from the podcast before I started my podcast, when I used to do podcasts and I'd be on the phone with people and I'd hear them chewing or typing or doing other stuff. And I was just like, man, this person is not interested. And so for me, it takes me out of it as someone getting interviewed. So, you know, all mine are done in person. And I have a real conversation with them and I look them in the eyes and we talk like real people. And I think that's one of the big keys to the success of it. Is that you do hear it's a real conversation. And like you said, and that's because I'm sitting there with them and I'm talking to them like a man, like we would at a dinner table or at a party. It's the same thing. It's the same idea. So we're not in some kind of studio. We're not on, you know, different lines. We're not somewhere across the world. We're just next to each other and we're talking shop. And I think that's why it still stands out to this day, you know, years later.
That's one of the best parts about it, too. And I'm very, very jealous about because I know like you and I know I think Jericho does all of his in person as well. And I wish that I could as you know, too, because there's just a different dynamic you get out of it when you're sitting right next to somebody. You can read their emotions. You can see how they're interacting with you. And it makes everybody kind of lets their guard down a little bit more. And you actually do have a little bit more of a conversation out of it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm lucky enough that my job allows me to do that. And so, you know, I'm still a full-time traveling professional wrestler. And so I travel the world. And so I'm in the locker room and I'm on shows with these guys. And so that's also we have the time to do it. You know, it's either do a podcast or just sit around and watch TV and do nothing. So,
yeah, that gets a little bit boring after a while, especially being on the road. You got to have some levity.
There you go.
So you're still doing some comedy shows. How exactly are those going about and how often are you doing those these days?
Well, Marty DeRosa and I are doing one in Chicago the night before Thanksgiving. We've kind of made this a tradition. This is the second year in a row. Marty and I, we'll do them around Chicago every now and then. And we'll travel around sometimes. But, you know, every August I go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and I do the wrestling comedy show with my buddy Brendan Burns over there. And I've been doing that 4 straight years now. So next year will be the 5th. And I love it. I love the idea. You know, for me, I'm just a guy. I don't know if I like the spotlight necessarily. I just like when I hear a crowd reaction and I know that kind of I caused it and I did something fun to make that happen. So whether it's in the ring or on the stage or, you know, either or even in front of the camera, it's always fun for me. I love doing them.
And that's the thing that, you know, I think people have to respect a lot is that you have figured out what you like to do and you've been able to find a way to make that into a living. And that's something I think, you know, obviously everybody would love to do. Not everybody can, but I mean, that's one of the great things that you have found a way to do that and do it in a variety of ways, whether it's, you know, with wrestling shows and now you're making documentaries or, you know, going to do the comedy shows and, you know, just finding different things and keep evolving, you know, and finding stuff that you like and you can make into a career.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for it. You know, I know a lot of people who hate what they do. And, you know, every time I do a crazy tour and I go to England and I get home for a day and I fly to Japan and then I get home and then I have to ship, you know, packages out and it can get frustrating or, you know, I'm a little bit hurt. You know, every day, whenever I seem to say to myself, man, this is the worst, you know, I always take myself and I step out of the situation and I step back and I just know that there's nothing, this is what I've worked so hard to do. Like, you know, this is all I ever wanted to do. And I'm always like, I can't believe that I'm getting to do it. And I've been getting to do it for so long too. So, yeah, I'm always grateful for this being my job.
You're not starting to feel like the grizzled veteran now that you've been doing this for as long as you have, do you?
A little bit. I wrestled a match the other day and I think, we figured out, he was like 4 when I started wrestling or something.
Is that weird?
Yeah, it's very weird, of course.
Well, I can imagine that's got to be a little bit strange just to think. I mean, because now, I mean, the same can be said for you with some of the guys that you looked up to. Like if you, you know, growing up, you know, you see like a Hulk Hogan or even a Stone Cold Steve Austin to some extent, who's probably, what is he, like 15 years older than you or something like that. You can sit there and go, man, I remember watching you when I was 10.
Yeah. You know, and some, I mean, a lot of those guys, and some of them, like, it's kind of weird. Like, you know, Rhino's a good example where, to me, it feels like I've been watching Rhino forever, but like, you know, Rhino just started 2 years before me, I think. So, but you know, when I loved wrestling the most, I was 15, 16 years old. And, you know, he had found his way kind of into a good spot. You know, a lot of those guys who kind of found success early, and now that I'm friends with, it's kind of weird that, like, oh, these guys just started a couple years before I did.
So, you know, and this goes to the podcast and all the, you know, your success in working the indies, but I've always find this kind of fascinating. So how have you been able to not only make but keep so many, you know, friends in the wrestling business for as long as you've been doing it? Because, and it seems like you stay in touch with guys, because we all know in this kind of work, it's kind of like, you know, see a guy, maybe you don't see him for a long time, you don't stay in touch, maybe things happen, you know, but that's especially true in wrestling. Everything gets spread out. But you're a guy that I think I've never heard anybody say anything bad about you, especially guys from within the business, and you're friendly with, it seems like, everybody.
Yeah, you know, I think it's because I'm not a cutthroat kind of guy, and I'm not interested in politics. Like, I just really like the wrestling and being a part of the wrestling industry. And I think that part hurt me in WWE, that I didn't play the game, and I watched people play the game, and I watched people move up the ladder, and, you know, I always wanted, if I was going to make a friend, I just wanted it to be organically, and I wanted, you know, to make a friend like real people make friends, not by kissing anyone's ass or anything. So I think, you know, I've always just kind of been myself. I've been true to myself, and I am who I am. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man, and, well, I'm not him, but I think that's the reason is, you know, it's just that I'm not, I don't know, like, I found my niche, so I don't, you know, I don't need to really kiss anyone's ass. I've been able to just be me. And through that, you know, you meet the people that are like-minded. And a lot of people, as we fought and crawled, you know, in the independent scene or what it might be, to try to make a name for ourselves, you find a lot of like-minded people who are going through the same kind of struggles. And it's almost like I've been in war and battle with a lot of people because, you know, I've been doing it for a long time now. And so I've met a lot of people who have been doing it like me, who have that same kind of war and battle that we've been through. And you know, the wrestling business is kind of like a brothership or a fraternity, or, you know, you make a bond, almost, it seems, for life.
So what's it like for you to have been, to be back in Ring of Honor, doing another, you know, stint there, and even working with somebody like Jay Lethal?
Yeah, it's been nice. You know, that was one of the things that was kind of, a negative in my career at that point is, you know, Jim Cornette had fired me from Ring of Honor at that time. And once he got released, or once he got let go or left, or whatever it was, you know, they had called and asked me to come back, and I had kind of had a chip on my shoulder. Cause I was very upset that they had released me. And that had like weighed on me for years. And finally, I think enough time had passed, and they'd always been reaching out, and I said, like, yeah, you know, maybe it's time for me to come back and mend the fences and have a positive attitude about it. And I have so far, and become good friends with some of the management in Sinclair Broadcasting. And so it's been a real nice experience, and working with guys like Jay Lethal and Dalton Castle has been really fun so far. And it's still, you know, still like a lot of great talent there. So, I enjoyed being in the locker room, being around highly talented people, because it motivates you to be the best you can.
Let me ask you about Dalton real quick. What do you make of his gimmick? Because that character to me is fantastic. And I'd always wondered, like, how would something like that play? And I've been very happily surprised to see that it's done fantastically well, because I know some people, I was worried that some people might be offended by something like that, but they haven't really been, and it just continues to grow.
Well, I've seen different incarnations of it throughout the years, because, you know, I met Dalton around wrestling before he even started wrestling. So, and I've watched him try to figure it out over years, and like, it just seems like he's been in just long enough, you know, where it should start kind of happening for him. I think he's been wrestling 6 or 7 years now, and he's starting to really get it. And it's finally all come together. And, yeah, so, and also, like, you know, when I was in Ring of Honor in the early years, 2004, 2005, there was a lot of serious wrestlers. Everybody was kind of wanted to do this All Japan style of wrestling. And I was able to stand out because I didn't. And I was different. And I think Dalton has kind of gone through the same thing where there's so many guys who want to do this crazy indie style of wrestling. And he's really realized that, like, yeah, you got to be a great wrestler, but you also, you know, if you play a little bit on the character side and the personality side, that it's easy to shine through. And he's a great example of it. And he's doing it. He's killing it right now.
So what's your next documentary going to be on?
I've had a couple. I think I've had four things that I've been throwing around in my head. It won't be for a while because I'm going to be promoting this, obviously. But so it'd be Wrestling Road Diaries because that's obviously the series. One idea was to do an audio version of it, you know, kind of because I've been playing and using audio for so long now. I also wanted to do one in Japan. I wanted to do one in England. And maybe Marty and I touring our comedy show. Maybe that might be an option too. So we got a couple things, and we'll see what plans out and what the best way to do it is.
The great thing is there's plenty of ideas that can be fooled around with, and you can figure it out. So, you know, when it comes to your career, how much longer do you think you could continue to wrestle? Because you're 36, which it's not old, but it's not young. But at the same time, you've done so many other different things. And especially with this kind of style, when you're incorporating more comedy wrestling and it doesn't have to take as much of a physical toll on you, how much longer do you think you'll go?
Yeah, well, I mean, the cool thing is I don't have to worry. I'm in a position where I'm not really worried about it. And anyone who's really followed my career and listened to the podcast from the beginning, like, you know, that was always a big worry. Like, I was always worried, what am I going to do when I get a little older or I can't wrestle anymore? And now, luckily, I'm in a position where I'm pretty confident that I can do this as kind of as long as I want. To be honest, I could do this style into my 50s and maybe even the 60s if it's not too embarrassing to be out there. So it's something I'm not even looking at or worrying about right now. And obviously, with the comedy and production, like, I can stay within the industry as long as I want, I feel, as long as I keep on staying ahead of the curve and being an innovator and evolving with the times. So I think that's kind of the key.
Last thing, I'm sure people come to you, other guys are in the business, and, you know, they'll ask for your advice about a match or a situation or whatever. Have guys come up to you and picked your brain about filmmaking and ideas or podcasting, different things like that?
Yeah, all the time. And, you can't give them a definite answer because what works for one, you know, won't necessarily work for the other. But, you know, I always enjoy spitballing ideas with people and trying to use their creativity. You know, there's only so much we can do in the ring, and people enjoy us as wrestlers and personalities. And so I'm all about people doing stuff outside of the ring to help expand who they are as wrestlers in the ring. And so, yeah, of course, that's something that people come to me.
So do you have a W flag for the Cubs right outside your apartment there? It's flying.
I sure do.
I hope so, man. You better.
Yeah.
We need as many of those as we can. Come on. I mean, like you said, once in 108 years, you got to have the flag flying and then get ready for another run next year.
Well, I mean, I'm just happy about it right now. I feel they could lose for the next 2,000 years. I'd be okay because I was able to live it.
I'd rather not they lose for 2,000 years, but this one is pretty sweet. Everybody can go online. You can go to ColtMerch.com. You can go to ColtCabana.com. Wrestling Road Diaries 3. Funny equals money. The DVD is available right now. You can get the digital download. That will be available on November 11th. And everybody can follow you on Twitter at Colt Cabana. What did I miss when it comes to plugs?
Instagram's at Colt Cabana too. My website is ColtCabana.com. You can kind of get through everything there. I also do I do this podcast series for a company called Howl.fm. And if you want to check it out real quick, you can go to howl.fm/Colt. And it's called Pro Wrestling Fringe. It's a storytelling podcast. It is behind a paywall. But, you know, you can get a free month with my code, and then you can just quit after a month if you don't want to pay, which is fine. I'm okay with that. But I tell stories about weird things in wrestling, and I have people who help me write them. So it's been a project that's really hard. It's post-produced. I put music behind it. You know, we write it. And we piece it together. And so there's a new season coming out, a new batch of three new episodes coming out just this week. tomorrow, actually, and whoever knows when you're listening to this, but one of the stories is about pro wrestling bears. One of the stories is about the French Angel, who people say that Shrek was based off of, and one is about All Japan's women wrestling in the 80s and 90s. It's called Pro Wrestling Fringe, and it's on howl.fm/cult.
Hey, wait a second. Have you wrestled a bear yet?
When I wrestled for the gathering at the Gathering of the Juggalos, I did wrestle a bear. It turned out to be a man in a bear suit, and he actually unzipped the bear suit, and it turned out underneath the bear suit was a large, hairy-chested gay man. So I doubled up on the bear that day.
I was going to say, does that count?
That's two bears. I wrestled two bears.
Has Tracy Smothers ever shared his story about wrestling a bear with you?
Yeah, he did on my podcast years ago.
That's right, he did. That's right.
And I think everybody always asks him about that when we see him in a locker room.
We have to. I mean, how many guys are still around that have wrestled a bear?
That's right. Not many.
Not many. So thanks again for the time, Colt. Best of luck with the DVD. Just again, everybody can go to ColtCabana.com or you can go to ColtMerch.com. Wrestling Road Diaries 3, Funny Equals Money. Available now in DVD and the digital download on November 11th. Appreciate the time and continued success.
Yeah, thank you. And if you order soon, while supplies last, the DVDs are autographed by myself, Kikutaro, and Grado.
How about that? Very nice. Yeah. So, always appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Brian.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.